Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Let's Watch podcast. I'm your host, James, with my co-host, Carolyn.
Hi.
Who is going to do this entire episode like speaking like Johnny Depp in Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, yes, I can.
That's not at all close to the way he sounded. Well, I don't
know, man. He was like we'll get there. We'll get there.
Yeah. We're doing the 1999 movie bracket challenge. And this week, the movies we're doing are Peppermint Candy, Sleepy Hollow, The Color of Paradise, and SLC Punk. Mm-hmm. And if you're at all curious to what we're doing, then you can go back to our brief little preview episode, which explains it and gives a rundown of every movie in there. And we have a little picture, I guess, maybe image of the bracket as well.
We call it a graphic in the design world.
Okay, thank you. I forgot the word.
we have a hand-drawn drawing. A picture.
Yeah, it's Pablo Picasso made it for us. We resurrected him and be like, here's a simple thing for you, and then immediately killed him again.
Yes, so if you'd like to see the Sistine Chapel of our bracket, was that even him? Nope.
No, that was not at all in the right time. Picasso did not do the Sistine Chapel. So isn't the Sistine Chapel by Michelangelo?
It absolutely was.
Wow. You're a trivia master.
I certainly am. I'm getting better.
So which one do you want to start with? Which twosome? Do you want the Peppermint Hollow or the Color of Punk?
Let's start. Oof, these are weird matchups this week. Let's start with the Color of Punk.
The Color of Punk.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you want to describe The Color of Paradise?
I certainly would love to because I have the IMDb description up. So, The Color of Paradise, directed and written by Majid Majidi.
Yeah!
So, it is the story of Muhammad, a blind Iranian boy, and his father, Hashem, who is always oscillating between accepting his son as he is and abandoning him as he represents a burden for him after the loss of his wife. So, in translation, bad dad and sweet boy.
Yeah, I don't know if he ever really accepts his son.
No.
I never really got that vibe in the movie.
I didn't either, but literally everything I read is like, oh, he struggles, and I don't really feel bad for dad in this one. I think it should be noted, this was, I believe it won the Academy Award for Best Foreign Film in 99. Or no, it maybe it was just nominated.
It didn't win, no.
It did not win.
It was like a critical darling. It won a bunch of smaller stuff,
mm-hmm.
But it did not win. I don't even think it was nominated for the Academy Award.
You know what? It was not, but it was nominated for quite a few other Best Foreign Film categories.
And it won a lot of critics' awards.
Yes, yes, which is interesting. What did you think of this one?
It doesn't overstay its welcome. Like, mm-hmm. It's only like 90 minutes, like not even 90 minutes long. Mm-hmm. But for like the first like 35, I was like, why did this need to be a movie?
Mm-hmm.
Because I do think it is, it's like the boy, Muhammad, mm-hmm. This is the only thing this actor's ever done. And he is like a real life blind kid.
Mm-hmm. Which is, and I was just more of like, nice.
Yeah, it is, but he's not a very good actor. Obviously.
I also don't know if the script really did him any justice. Like, I had really big difficulty trying to tell how old this kid was because, like, he seemed so wise beyond his years, but then he would just break down crying for kind of no reason in some situations. And I was like, okay, obviously he's a little boy with fragile emotions, but...
Yeah, I mean, he's going through a lot.
Yeah.
He, like, recently lost his mother. His dad sucks.
Oh, he sucks.
And he... And, you know, like, is having to deal with his disability, and his sisters and his grandma are very good to him.
Mm-hmm.
Really, it's mostly just his dad. But, like, that obviously will do a bunch to mm-hmm. a small child. I thought he was, like, 8.
Yeah, probably.
But for, like, that first section of time, I didn't really understand why this needed to be a movie. I would have been like, why not just show us his real life? Like, it could just be a doc, mm-hmm. because I don't know anything about this world, and I don't know if this what the story's based on, if this kid is actually from the village they filmed in or mm-hmm. or what. But as it went along and as you found like a little bit more about the father, it became more interesting. But ultimately I just think it was like a fine art film. Like, it has beautiful landscapes and it's very well shot, like,
yeah,
incredible imagery. But
yeah, it was a really quiet and peaceful film, which was very nice. But you're right, I think where I found it lacking was that it wasn't terribly risk-taking. in that, I don't know, they never really showed you the full bad or the full good or anything like that. It just kind of was. Like, I kind of had an issue with the father. I mean, he was a jerk, but beyond that, I had an issue with him in that, like, everyone else in this movie, the sisters, the grandma, the teachers, the students, everyone except his father was cool with this kid. But what I didn't understand was kind of like, it didn't really show why it was harder for the father. Like, I get it, he lost his wife, but everyone else lost their mom, daughter, whatever as well. So yeah, so I guess I just struggled with that, is they never really told us why this sad sack of a dad was like that.
They did, but it was like kind of near the back half of the movie, right? When he sent Muhammad away. And mm-hmm. then his grandma's like, peace, or his mother, I should say. Mm-hmm. It's like, peace. Then he's like, who's going to take care of me when I mm-hmm. get old? And mm-hmm. it's like, well, my guy, he's 8. and you're about to get remarried to like a younger woman, and you have 2 daughters who like obviously will get married off. But it's not the end of the world. Also, it's like, you know, maybe put your disabled child first in front of you. Like, his needs right now are, and just because he's, like, they sent him away to a guy who is blind, but who is also a carpenter. Mm-hmm. So it's like, kind of like, how does he not realize that maybe it's like, if Muhammad is taught well and he like works really hard, then his disability, he will just be like a normal person able to do everything else, right? He'll mm-hmm. just be blind. And like, his inability to see that, I think, is interesting, but the movie never really goes there, right? Yeah. It's more about him learning through guilt. Mm-hmm. More than anything, mm-hmm. Which is mostly a critique on the guy, the character, than anything else.
Yeah, it felt very 90s to me, in that it looked nice. It was kind of like, I don't know, kind of foggy around the edges, like visually. But it's one of those 90s movies where it's like, it all kind of feels like it exists in some dream world where nothing's quite real. Everything's a little bit glossed over, you know, like I said, this movie wasn't very risk-taking. It didn't really, I don't know, delve into anything too deeply. It just kind of like skimmed the surface. And all in all, it was like, I wouldn't say it was heartwarming, but it was like, it was just a nice story that was trying to make a point. I'm just not so sure that it made the point terribly well.
Yeah. And the ultimate conclusion, like, I'm fine with where the movie ended and how mm-hmm. it ended. I never believed that the father character would accept him, right? Like, it yeah. kind of ends with him like jumping in the river way too late to save his son.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about that. When he was standing there staring at him, I feel like that's a trope that is used frequently in movies. But I was kind of like, all right, buddy, what's the issue here? Like, was he scared? Was he trying to decide to save the horse? Like, because the horse yeah. is their work life, you know, horse or kid, that sort of thing. Or maybe, you know, the usual, maybe it's just easier if I don't save him at all. But yeah,
like,
I don't know.
By fear, because like, it did look like pretty like the waters shown to us to be incredibly rough. Like, yeah. I don't know. But also, it's like, at some point, like the survival instinct of saving your child should take in. And
yeah,
I don't know if I like that part frustrated me, because I thought it would have been fine if he didn't. Like, that mm-hmm. would have been a choice, right? Like, I don't know. It probably wouldn't have been a great movie to watch then, because you would have been like, well, that's just fucking depressing. This guy's life sucks. And yeah. then he made the decision not to save his son. But the guy that's legitimately thought the choice he was going to make. Mm-hmm. But then he takes like 5 minutes and then gets in the water. And I was like, it's kind of a little late. Like, he's gone down already, so.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, the shock would have worn off earlier, or he would have made the decision earlier. Like, it was just weird. And then he was so devastated when, like, because the kid dies, right? Spoiler.
No, he doesn't. He lives.
Does he?
Yeah, his hand moves at the end.
Oh, I thought that was the last twitch of breath.
No, I think that because the light shines on him, and I think that means he's alive, and then the dad
would
be a better dad.
I thought it was his spirit flying away.
Oh, no, I thought it was like, he's okay, he's going to be okay, and then the dad will be a good dad to him.
Well, that's nice. I mean, in my version where he died, you know, the dad realizes the weight of his actions, but I did think it was nice that, yeah, they had this nice glowing light instead of making it dark and gloomy, because, I mean, dad was already like, he was a bit of a wreck.
he's had a rough go in the past couple of days. His mm-hmm. grandma, his mother died, and then his marriage got called off because yeah. of the omen of death or whatever. I think I just would have enjoyed a more like either following Muhammad in school would have mm-hmm. been interesting. Mm-hmm. Or if it was about I don't know how true to life this story is, but if this was a doc about this family and mm-hmm. then the real struggles of raising a blind child in a small village in Iran.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the issue I had with it, is it seemed like a film that was supposed to be like a slice of life, but a lot of the stuff that happened in it, I was like, this doesn't really make sense. So you're right. I think if this were a doc, I think I would have loved it. But what it ends up being is, like, that's not to say this isn't a good movie, but what it does end up being for me at least is a story of a dad struggling to accept his son. And we have seen that a lot of times. And I don't know that this one did anything new or different than what we've seen before.
Yeah, it's true. But like the landscape shots they get are stunningly beautiful.
Oh, so. Yeah, it's lovely. This movie looks really nice. Like you said, it was probably filmed on film. It was that kind of era. And even today we were talking prior to this podcast that it still feels like it exists untouched. I think probably because it's a small foreign film, but it still feels like you can see it in kind of the original way it was intended, which is interesting.
Yeah, and it's very laconic and like, as you said, like a slice of life, and you just kind of live with these characters. And if it maybe just didn't connect as well with us, because mm-hmm. Also maybe because of the time, but mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it is ultimately a fine movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much more I really have to say about it. I just didn't find a lot there.
Well, nope. I agree with that. I mean, the dad's ability to even make his mustache look sad was pretty impressive, but
he does have resting sad face.
He does. That poor guy looks like a basset hound. My goodness.
He's like beaten down by life already.
Yep.
Do you want to move on to SLC Punk?
I think we should. I mean, I would call it SLC Dunk, but...
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, I had to.
Damn it.
Also, you have to say SLC Punk because it has the...
yeah, sorry.
Yeah, get it right.
It doesn't have the exclamation in the movie, though.
No, it doesn't. Just on the IMDb. Which leads me into... there are, I guess... I'll read the Rotten Tomatoes description for this one. So it says, merging anarchic spirit with straightforward melodrama, SLC Punk is a hit and miss odyssey of youthful rebellion elevated by Matthew Lillard's dramatically potent star turn. That's what people thought of it. And what it's about is in the early 1980s, Steve-O and heroine Bob are the only two dedicated punks in a conservative Salt Lake City. So,
yeah, that's a pretty good description. Yeah. It was written and directed by James Marindino,
mm-hmm.
And it stars Matthew Lillard and Jason Segel in a small part, even though he's not really a big character. And
then a little
the guy
boy.
Who plays Shooter McGavin is mm-hmm. also in it. What did you think of SLC Punk?
I honestly didn't know what to expect going into it. And when I started watching, I was like, what is this? Not in a bad way, just like it's confusing, just how it's all built and everything. But I actually liked it a lot more than I thought I would. It's kind of told in this like weird, I don't know, pseudo documentary or like influencer kind of style. Like there's a lot of talking to the camera and then popping back into real life, that sort of thing, complete with like, you know, the monologues that you see on YouTube and blah, blah, blah. So I thought that was really interesting. And I thought Matthew Lillard was, I mean, I only really know him as Shaggy from the Scooby-Doo movies and that guy from Scream, I think.
Yeah, he is in the first Scream movie as well.
Yeah, so it was interesting seeing him in this kind of role. And I liked him a lot better in this than in anything else I've seen him in.
Okay, I agree. I think Matthew Lillard is good in this movie. And I certainly liked like the first hour of this movie when it was very much just about the punk lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And it kind of like... it's very much being like a critique on American culture
mm-hmm.
and like what it's saying about that stuff and pointing out like the differences between like the boomers and the Gen X children mm-hmm. and like let's say every child goes through and then the stuff. But and then I did enjoy the stuff about like what people are in this lifestyle. It kind of, and I do enjoy how they point out that Steve-O and Jason Segel's character to an extent like have a choice to be like this
mm-hmm.
Whereas other people like Bob don't like mm-hmm. this is just their life. They're not, they don't have like a, like they're in this lifestyle because of their life, like their life around them has kind of made them this way. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Steve-O is like, I'm actively going to be this. And he like makes a choice. And I do enjoy the movie that points out like that, like contradiction about him. Like he always has the option to leave if he doesn't want it anymore. Yeah. And as he slowly like realizes this in his character, I thought that was interesting, but then I thought the movie became more of a critique about the people in that lifestyle. And that didn't really connect with me as much. Cause it was like, I was like, you could critique Steve-O because like, that's kind of like his character arc is him learning that about himself. But I didn't like the stuff when it was like critiquing like the lifestyle in general, because I was like you pointed out, like some people just are pushed into this point and like they encounter like sad weirdos all the time, but they are that way for a reason.
Yeah. It's interesting too, when you put it that way, because it's like there's cultures and countercultures and that sort of thing. And you're right. People can choose the lifestyle, but what's so sad about it is heroine Bob, who doesn't choose the lifestyle, is also the one that gets stuck into all the bad sides of it. Like he's the one who doesn't make it out. So it's like the people who choose to do it because it's hip or trendy, and this I think is very current now as well, you do it because it's cool, but there's people who that is their real life and they have no choice, and it's not cool for them. It's just their life.
Yeah. And they play some of the side characters kind of like jokey. Like Jason Segel's character is obviously a person with huge anger issues and control issues. And then Till Schweiger's character, Mark, is kind of like a person who is like almost out of control in a sense. Like they just, he's like almost bipolar in a way, right? Like he's up and down all the time. And I don't know if he has like real friends. And they show them as a way to like why Steve-O and Bob find these people interesting and like why they would hang out with them. But I do think at some point they're kind of playing their characters for laughs. And I was like, I don't know about that, but it's also like the 90s and it's just not how that stuff's handled at that point.
Like, yeah, it is interesting. It was all like, even at the beginning where he's getting into that argument with his parents and stuff, it does feel all kind of comical. But that said, it is saying something under all the comedy, but you're right. Sometimes the laughs feel, they kind of cheapen the,
I guess, they're laughing at the character.
Yeah, right? It cheapens the message and that sort of thing. But
I love the parent scene though. Like,
oh God. Yeah. Well, cause it kind of sets up the whole movie and how the fact is that, yeah, it is a choice for him, and his parents had been the hippies and that sort of thing. And then they had chosen a different lifestyle. Like they'd kind of grown out of it almost. So it really sets up the whole premise of the movie and why they are in this punk scene.
Yeah. That's true. And I also think it's like, in a way, it's like when he's talking to his dad about how being, he's like you sold out, but it is also, that's also like about art in a way as well. Right. Like Steve-O's being a punk, but he gets a good grade point average. Like he graduates almost at the top of his class because at some point he does care about what he's doing, but it's also like about when you make stuff, like they're, especially with like the punk scene, right? It's like people make stuff just because they want to be punk. But then that's also at a point, it's like if they get successful enough, then like money starts coming around. And then it's like, does that cheapen the message? And that's kind of like the point with his dad character, other than being like, you rebel against your parents. But it's also, it's like his dad was like, you'll be a great lawyer, right?
Yep. It's like they always kind of know that it's like a phase, if you will.
Yeah. And he points out like it's hard to be that lifestyle, right? Because like, how do you make fucking money?
It's interesting. I was reading a little bit about the movie, the tribes that you see in the movie, which I thought was really interesting, because there's the punks, there's the mods, there's the rednecks, there's the neo-Nazis, and then there's I think there's new waivers or something too. There's a lot of different tribes. And I think it's so interesting because in what I was reading, it was basically like, okay, this tribe doesn't like this tribe. This tribe's kind of in the middle. And it's like, it's this... Yeah, it's these people who put themselves into various groups who hate the other groups simply to hate them, not necessarily because their values are different or anything like that. Sometimes that is the case, obviously, but it's like you hate that whole other group of people for the sake of hating them just because some unwritten rule says you have to. And I think exploring this in the 80s makes it a little bit more obvious because all these people look so obviously different, as opposed to current times where it's like, there might be different views, but no one looks, you know, you don't have all the people in the suits versus the people with the pointy hair. Or I guess maybe you still do. But You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, yeah, I agree with that. And I do think, like, using this scene is good because there is such distinct visual differences between all the groups.
Mm-hmm.
But what did you think, ultimately, like, the message of the movie was?
I don't know. I think it kind of, one of its main points was kind of like what you mentioned. It's like, some people get to choose their lifestyle, others don't. But, I mean, ultimately, I don't know. I couldn't tell if it was saying it is a choice or it isn't. Because you're right, in the end, he kind of moves away from the punk lifestyle, decides it's not for him, because it's too harsh of a lifestyle. So honestly, I don't know what the main point was. I felt there's a lot of different messages, little ones, but in terms mm-hmm. of a big one, I couldn't tell you what you got.
Yeah, it's kind of where it's like, I think the movie's like very enjoyable to watch and it's like fun and kinetic.
Mm-hmm.
But at some point, I think it kind of gets lost in itself a little bit near mm-hmm. around when Steve-O starts realizing and stuff and people start leaving, right? Like people move on either because they move or because they're going to university or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, I think it kind of gets its message a little muddled, in my opinion, because I thought at the beginning it was like a good takedown of, or the good explanation of like why people go this, like why people choose this lifestyle and like what is like wrong with American culture,
mm-hmm.
right? And then when it starts to end up being like, well, you know, you got to play the game a little bit. And mm-hmm. then I'm like, well, I mean, the Steve-O Weiss you've introduced us to, would he? Or yeah. like there is, he never decides, like, he's like, what is he going to do later, right? Because Jason Segel's character is like, I'm going to go botanist and then I'm going to like fight for the rainforests, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Steve-O never decides that, right? He's like, I'm going to be a lawyer, I guess. And then he's like, I don't know what I'm going to, like, he never makes the decision. Like, I believe that character would be like, make the decision of being like, of fighting against something still. Like, I just mm-hmm. don't believe he would just not do that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Mm-hmm.
It's also about like, Bob is very much like the supporting character with the biggest one, but it's also about Steve-O learning to accept Bob's relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're best friends, but they won't be best friends forever. Like obviously like other people are leaving, but Bob is getting heavily invested into a relationship. And it's about Steve-O understanding that as well. Like all of these mm-hmm. life changes and not getting left behind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And who you are in high school is not who you are in the rest of your life, especially since Steve-O obviously came from a background of much more privilege. And so it's like, yeah, okay, Steve-O, this is fun for you for now, but you can get out. But Bob, he can't. It's weird saying Bob. Heroin Bob can't.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Heroin Bob who doesn't do drugs.
Yeah, of course. it's interesting. This movie was the opening night film for Sundance in 99. And I think it kind of shows, like, we've talked about it before, how 99 was like, I don't know, a time of cultural change and turnover and that sort of thing, and people kind of frustrated with the status quo. So, I mean, Sundance is putting it literally on their opening night, kind of saying, "We see you," which I think is kind of funny.
Well, yeah, it's. Oh, I mean, it's not the first movie that has had the undertones of this anxiety and mm-hmm. stuff, and I think it is like a common thing in all generations. Mm-hmm. Like, it's certainly. I think this movie plays very well for our current time as well. Maybe a little too hopeful, but it is very much like about that anxiety. They did make a sequel to this movie recently.
Yeah, I saw that. I mean, I didn't see the movie, but I did see that they made a new one.
It's about Bob. Mm-hmm. I guess they just like retcon the ending or whatever, so he doesn't die, because anybody who's become something whose name you'd recognize doesn't come back for the sequel, surprisingly.
Mm-hmm.
So
it is called Punk's Dead, SLC Punk 2.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I kind of struggle with this movie because I think there's a lot of good in it. I just wish it was better, ultimately. and I didn't necessarily think Matthew Lillard was that good once he became more solemn.
Yeah, I liked him when he was, I guess, the most punk, if you will, when he was kind of doing his rants to the camera and seeming really established in his viewpoints and that sort of thing.
And he's like way over the top, right? Like,
he's ridiculous.
Yeah.
The taller the hair, the bigger the acting.
Yeah. And he's all over the place, mm-hmm. like even like with his like physical movements, but then he becomes like more reserved. I don't know if I believed that. Maybe, mm-hmm. and that might be the performance. That may just be me as I've said earlier, just kind of being like, I don't know what you're saying, movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else to say about SLC Dunk?
No, I'm ready to vote.
Okay. Give me uno momento.
So to type, James, you just like put your fingers on the keyboard. It's not too hard.
Make sure I have to spell it right. Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Ooh.
Okay, so we disagreed.
Mm-hmm.
This is the first time this has happened. Well, no, you just refused to vote previously, and then we had to make a decision.
Yeah.
You abstained. The reason I picked Color of Paradise is that I think it ultimately is like a little... Though I took more enjoyment from the way Color of Paradise was filmed.
Mm-hmm.
And even though it is definitely a more boring movie,
mm-hmm,
and stuff, I just found myself, I'd rather return to that one because SLC Punk left me with such a sour taste. But
that is fair. I would take the first hour of SLC Punk over Color of Paradise.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. What do we do? Do we just fight it to the death? Do we rate them, and then whoever has the highest, conviction in their rating?
No, I do agree that I think the first hour of SLC Punk is the best part of any of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
So for that, I think SLC should probably move on because it definitely, that is the best part of any movie is, and it's like a large part of the movie.
Do you guys see that? I got him to flip that easy.
I just think it's ultimately like, even though I do think Color of Paradise is a better shot film,
mm-hmm,
but the acting's better in SLC Punk as well.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least the actors are given more to do, I think is the right way to phrase that.
What it boils down to is these two films are very hard to compare because one is bright and loud and showy and very talky, and the other one is as quiet and solemn as you could be. So,
I think with the next two we're going to talk about, like, you could very much say the same thing about,
mm-hmm,
them.
Mm-hmm.
But I just ultimately think neither of these movies are very strong, but they are like of the time.
Yeah.
And I do think SLC Punk has the stronger moments.
Yes. Yes, they are very much a product of their time, which is, it's interesting that that's what's stalling us on deciding which one's good.
Yeah. And I think SLC Punk is trying to say more.
Yeah. That's what put it over for me is that it, I could see more of the why behind it for the most part.
Yeah. And that's like, obviously like the Color of Paradise is saying stuff as well, but it never really goes into like, why, mm-hmm, is this man's life so hard with a disabled child? Right. Like, we don't know anything about why.
Mm-hmm.
We can make guesses because we know, are familiar with the country, but you and I were like very young in 99, so maybe we're wrong about that. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say Iran doesn't have the best like undervalued child programs, like, because not very many countries do.
Yeah, and it is interesting that they were even able to put out such a good product because I think that their film industry is not exactly booming in those days.
No, they're and still currently they're like pretty restrictive on what gets in and what gets out.
Mm-hmm.
Of there. But do you want to move on to...
Let's do it.
Sleepy Candy?
Sleepy Candy or Hollow Mints, I guess.
Peppermint Hollow.
Peppermint Hollow. So I will... I guess we can start with Sleepy Hollow to get it out of the way.
Oh, do we have to?
We certainly do. So Sleepy Hollow with a nice 7.3 rating on IMDb. Directed by Tim Burton. And oh boy, is it directed by Tim Burton.
It's very Burton-y.
The description is, Ichabod Crane is sent to Sleepy Hollow to investigate the decapitations of three people, with the culprit being the legendary apparition, the Headless Horseman. So that's not to be confused with The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, which I think also came out in 99. I almost watched the wrong one, and that would have made me so sad because I would have had to watch it again.
Well, maybe that one was better.
I think it was animated.
Oh, okay. I thought Ichabod Crane was a Disney character. Is he public domain?
To be honest, I have somehow managed to stay away from all things Sleepy Hollow. So all things about this confused me because I thought Ichabod was the Headless Horseman. Turns out that's very incorrect.
No. That's not true. This movie is shot by Emmanuel Lubezki, who, mm-hmm, shoots all of like Alejandro Iñárritu's movies. And I think that's the best part of this movie, is that it is it has interesting cinematography, at least, even though the color palette is drab or burnt.
Yeah, it's like, did you drench these guys in like whitening powder? My God, it was rough.
Mm-hmm. And it stars that Johnny Depp. Christina Ricci is there to do something, I guess.
I just, anytime Michael she's on Gambon, the screen, I couldn't see her eyebrows and I couldn't deal with that. So,
yeah. Casper Van Dien, Christopher Walken, Christopher Lee, a bunch of very famous actors in small parts. And then it's mostly just Johnny Depp and young Christina Ricci and a boy.
Yeah. I mostly was like, that guy's familiar. That guy's familiar. That guy's familiar. And I realized it was like Dumbledore, Uncle Vernon from Harry Potter, Count Dooku from Star Wars. And then the list just got longer and longer. So it was very distracting.
Oh, yeah. A lot of them aren't in the movie very long or are just, a lot of them don't have character arcs. Like the only person who gets a character arc is Johnny Depp's character.
I liked the kid.
And this movie. Yeah. I mean, he's like the best person in the movie, right?
Yeah.
Even though he just ends up becoming like Ichabod's slave.
I mean, yes.
But this movie sucks.
Yeah. It just made no sense. I was like, is it supposed to be funny? Is it supposed to be like, ooh, like badass, got drama and action? Because like, it was so theatrical in performance and like, Ichabod is, I don't know, a detective slash doctor slash Johnny Depp. And he's wearing these like weird glasses and has these weird tools. And it felt comical. And there were moments that were just supposed to be funny, but the movie wasn't funny. I couldn't tell if it meant to be over the top or if it didn't. I think it succeeded in neither of those things.
Yeah, the tone is all over the place in this movie. It's like Johnny Depp's character is kind of like a bumbling goofball.
Yeah.
But then there's like extreme body horror.
Yeah.
And like over the top gore, but it doesn't, that they shoot, they present it in a way that it's like serious, but then it's supposed to be kind of like, Johnny Depp's character is supposed to be goofy, but then he's not goofy the next scene. And then.
And it's not even it's like it was campy. Like the heads are literally rolling all over the place. And I was killing myself laughing, but you're not supposed to be. But it didn't look good. So I'm like, are you presenting this to me as like it's supposed to be spooky? Because it's not.
Yeah. And it was never scary. And I think, I don't know if they were trying to make it scary, but. It's also like Ichabod starts as like trying to be like a good cop and being like, we need to do stuff differently. And then just like immediately forgets about it once he's like gets scared the first time, or he like continually like gets freaked out by like blood and gore. And then, you know, it cuts to a scene of him being like, I just did an autopsy on that woman. And this is what I know now.
Well, that's the thing. He was presented as like, when he meets the girl for the first time, he's all suave and he's this mysterious gentleman. And yeah, with the autopsy and stuff, he's like, he's got the dramatic reveal and he's supposed to be this like big New York pro who's like got his convictions and that sort of thing. But like, they're telling him about the Headless Horseman and he's like, what? And it's like, I don't understand. Are you the suave New York detective or are you a bumbling fool who's scared of everything? You can't be both.
And he was whatever the movie needed at the time, right? Like, it was like, we need you to be a bumbling fool now. And then the next scene, it's like, you need to be competent again.
Yeah, it's like, I think they didn't think about how it would piece together once they did that. It feels very much like, oop, yep, they shot that one on a different day when we were feeling like, time for confident Ichabod.
It is very, like, the issues with the lots of Burton movies are these issues, right? Like, it is...
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't, these things happen again in other movies he's made. And this movie has the same problems. I think it's a little worse in a way because I just don't think he knows. Like, it just feels like everybody in the movie is being directed differently as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really understand the point of Christina Ricci's character other than to have like this weird love interest, but they don't have any chemistry.
No, you hit it on the head. It was only to be the love interest.
And for her to be like a good person and, you know, so somebody else lives because everybody else dies in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then they have like Michael Gambon's character, who obviously they're hiding something. It's pretty easy to tell.
Mm-hmm.
But then like he's not in the movie for like an hour.
Mm-hmm. There's very few good people in this movie. It's like the kid, Ichabod, and the chick.
Yeah, and then there's, like, the guy who throws the pumpkin at his head. who's supposed to be like, yeah. You're initially be like, oh, they introduce him as being like, he's interested in Christina Ricci.
Yeah.
But then we like never see that or there's any conflict. And then he just gets like cut in half.
Yeah. Once and he has like, his.
Oh, like, I was supposed to care about that character.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's had a big standoff. And also, she didn't seem phased at all.
No. They're like, that guy died. They're like, okay. And then they move on. And it's like, well, I guess they just. I guess they just decided to cut that storyline, but we still needed to see it. So
I've got to be honest. I have issues with movies that have like, you know, you're following the mystery the whole time. And then all of a sudden there's this big reveal and they kind of like backtrack and show how they did all the things. And it's like, it feels like you're spoon feeding the audience when you do that, like either put those clues all throughout or like, I don't know, just have the big reveal and then have the plot happen after that. But I don't like when they backtrack. And to be honest, when he says the big name reveal, like, oh, it's so-and-so, son of so-and-so, and blah, 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 blah. I was like, sorry, wait, who? Like, it was supposed to be this big dramatic scene, and I literally did not know the names of the people that he was saying. So I was like, all right, I guess we'll see in the next scene when we see the people.
Yeah. It's like the only person you know for sure when they're talking about is Ichabod Crane.
Mm-hmm.
But there's never a scene where he's not in it being talked about and everybody else is just kind of like, okay, they reveal it and you're like, I'll find that out later when they show me who that is and not just tell me.
Yep. This movie's nuts because I'm looking at the poster right now and it's like this dramatic moonlit horse and headless horseman and it looks Tim Burton-y, but it looks, I don't know, spooky or, you know, mystical or whatever. The tagline is literally heads will roll. Are you trying to be funny? I don't understand.
Yeah, like, I think the biggest indictment we could say about this movie is that it's not fun.
No, it's confusing and not in a good, like, thrilling, let's unpack this mystery kind of way. It's just, it's the definition of uneven and disorganized, honestly. And
ultimately boring.
Mm-hmm. And too long.
This movie's not even 2 hours, and it felt so long. It felt like 5 hours. I was just like, it's still going.
I got half an hour in, and nothing had happened, and I was like straight up gonna go to bed.
And even like the scenes where it's like, you're like, you might get some, like at least with the action scenes of like when people die, they're not even that interesting. It's just like a man on a horse without a head riding towards somebody. He cuts their head off and then leaves, and then Johnny Depp faints.
It's funny because each one is presented as like a big battle scene too. And you're like, ooh, what's going to be the drama? It's literally the same every time. And it's not scarier or cooler or anything any of the time. So why was this movie made, James?
I don't know. I guess Tim Burton was like, I've made a lot of successful movies and I want to make stuff in my style. And they'll let me make a movie if it's about Sleepy Hollow, I guess. I don't know.
He just likes hanging with Johnny Depp, to be honest.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. It definitely fits the same aesthetic as like Edward Scissorhands and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's the Burton aesthetic, but it just does not work in this movie.
Mm-mm.
And this could be like really like the turning point in his like career, because I'm looking at it, or at least what he's directed pre and post Sleepy Hollow. Like before this movie, he directed like Ed Wood and the Batman movies and Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands and Pee Wee, which are all beloved movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't seen all of them, but the ones I've seen are like very good. And then he does Mars Attacks, which is like goofy, but fun. And it's not boring, but it's not like a great movie. And then he does this movie, and then he does the Planet of the Apes movie, which is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And then he does Big Fish, which is good. And then it starts going along like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, fine. Course Ride, fine. Sweeney Todd, fine. Alice in Wonderland, bad. And then it just gets like worse and worse.
Yeah.
Right? And then it's like, ultimately, it's like either like he ran out of ideas or everybody just kind of got bored with his aesthetic. Or like he just doesn't pick good projects. Like maybe he just doesn't pick good scripts. And he's more of like, I want to direct a movie about this idea.
And it seems he started delving more into to young audience work as well. Because like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, Corpse Bride, not Sweeney Todd, that's rough. Alice in Wonderland, Frank and Weenie. Like he started getting more into young people's things. Which is weird. I guess that's a choice. Because before it was all like Beetlejuice and like weird and wonderful in that sort of way.
Beetlejuice is kind of a kid's movie.
So maybe this guy just has like a weird.
But Beetlejuice is really good.
Yeah, it is. It's, but you're right. You know what? All of his stories come from like I don't know, kind of fairy tales, like, because Beetlejuice, it's all about like, oh, if you say his name, he will appear, blah, 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 a little bit of Bloody Mary kind of action there. And like, I guess that is the same with this. It does come from, you know, the old legend of Sleepy Hollow by Washington Irving, which I don't know. I think it was one of those fables that people told kiddos.
Mm-hmm. And I think obviously he's very interested in like Gothic mm-hmm. architecture and like that whole set of mood. But then he kind of, and like, I certainly like love campy movies. And if they're done right, they can be like a ton of fun and really good. But
this was not done right.
Just completely misses. Like, it's just such a whiff. And like Johnny Depp's performance is so weird. Like, obviously it's like, if you're getting a big star, the actor decides what their performance is, right? And mm-hmm. if you're as famous as Johnny Depp is, he's not going to get told by anybody not to do what he's going to do.
Yeah. But that's what it felt like.
Give notes.
It felt like he was kind of like, I'm going to play it this way. And I was like, that was a really weird thing to do. And I think if he had a director to kind of like rein him in, then that wouldn't have been that way. But that's just how Johnny Depp is.
Yeah, but at least he's like trying in this movie because now he just doesn't try anymore.
Yeah, well, with Pirates of the Caribbean, when he was doing it, everyone was like, "What is he trying? Is he playing it drunk? Like, is he like what? What is this character?" And no one really knew. And he's like, "Just trust me, guys." Like,
yeah, and like I obviously like actors make choices, and mm-hmm. in general, most of the time they're right with the choices and they work. But they also get notes,
mm-hmm.
Or the director will be like, "Hey, you can do it this way, but let's do it this way," and then they kind of like figure it out later. But with Johnny Depp in this movie, it just felt like he was doing whatever he wanted to, and Tim Burton was like, "Yeah, that's good, fine, let's move on."
Well, because they love obviously each other.
But they like working together, so and they have made good movies together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get the performance in this. And I just feel bad for Christina Ricci because I don't understand why she's in this movie. And she obviously like kind of realizes at some point.
Yeah, that was kind of her whole career though. That, like, she was really good in a bunch of things. And then it got weird. Like, and then she disappeared.
Well, I didn't know if you knew. I don't know if you know this, Carolyn, but it's impossible for a woman to act between the ages of 30 and 50. There's just, you can't. They can't, you just, women can't act in those ages.
Well, this is true. They just have to go into their homes and not come out until you're an appropriate age to be a mother, aunt, you know, interesting housewife.
Grandma.
Yep. Yep.
Or you can be like the young heartthrob, but then there's no 8 roles in between. It just, they don't happen.
This poor girl.
Because I think she was like 18 in this movie.
Yeah, she was young. She was a child star though, because she was also in... what's that weird thing? Adam's Family.
Yes.
She was Wednesday Addams.
And like, she's certainly like if you heard the casting before, like in a Tim Burton movie, Christina Ricci fits, right?
Yes.
Like, you're like, oh yeah, I can see that. Like, she's the right type of performer. She has the look. And then they just don't do anything with her.
Mm-hmm. Just shave off her eyebrows and let her play, you know?
Yeah, the eyebrows were weird.
Oh,
I
God,
don't...
they were horrible.
And like, she certainly had like, I think when everybody first... was introduced to her as like a child actress, like as Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, oh, this is going to be like a really interesting performer for a long time. And then her career really hasn't worked out in that way.
It's weird because she did do some really interesting things. Like, she was in Prozac Nation, which is like, that's a rough movie. She was in Monster. I thought she was really good in Monster.
She is very good in Monster. She's Black Snake Moan. She's really good in Speed Racer. Where a campy movie that she fits, like the Wachowskis have like figured out like her perfect like campy role.
Mm-hmm.
And then just kind of like slows down, does TV stuff.
Yeah.
Animated stuff,
here and there,
right?
Like, yeah.
And like, maybe she was just like, if she'd been acting for a long time, maybe she was just like, I'm just going to do what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Right. Or it's like, if they pay, like, they'll pay me, I'll do it, whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. But like, I'm going to be like, I have other stuff I want to do in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she was there. I don't know. I just feel like she's a really good actress, and I just wish there was more of her, or more of her used properly.
That's the thing. I like watching her in everything that she's in. She's just not in a whole lot. And when she is in it, she's not given anything to do.
Yeah. Like, she's just 40 now.
Yeah.
So. And I don't know. Like, there's a bunch of previously, like Summer Phoenix was in SLC Punk, and mm-hmm. she basically stopped acting for a decade to like raise her family.
Yeah.
So. It's like, you just don't know, right, what people do. I just wish, I would much rather have seen Christina Ricci be given the roles that, and then this is like, will never happen.
I vote for a remake, but with Christina Ricci as Ichabod Crane.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think she would be a way more interesting Johnny Depp character.
Oh, absolutely.
And then Johnny Depp plays the young Katrina Van Tassel.
Yeah, I think that would be perfect.
I'd be like, I mean, it would be cool, but that will never happen because, you know, those movies don't get made.
Well, of course not. Why would they? People don't like watching movies with women in them. Come on.
It's impossible for white men to watch a movie without a white man as the lead.
Yes. That's what I've been raised to believe by the film industry.
It's true. Yep. Tell us we're wrong. Do you want to move on to the peppermint candy?
Yeah, let's do it. So, Peppermint Candy,
another joyful movie about pure happiness.
It has an 83% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it is described as an intense emotional masterpiece of Korean New Wave. Peppermint Candy is told in reverse, taking the viewers back through 20 years of a doomed man's life while chronicling the sentiments and changes of modern Korea. So it is directed and written by Chang Dong Lee, who you may know from Burning.
Yeah.
Which is big and popular. So it is really interesting to watch what he did 20 years ago, I guess.
Yeah. I think it is important to have read the description before watching this movie.
Otherwise, it is confusing.
Not to know that it goes, like, you figure it out pretty quickly that it's going in reverse because they give you, like, distinct title cards, but to understand what this movie is critiquing, right? Because you're watching it and this guy, fucking, he's, like, a terrible person. Like, he's bad in a bunch of ways, but it is very much about criticizing Korea.
Yes, and it's interesting because at the beginning, obviously, it's this man who's in a lot of pain, and I think automatically that puts him into, like, a sentimental viewpoint because you're like, what made this man become this way? And then literally the first chapter, the first flashback, it's like five distinct phases. The first flashback, you're like, oh, I don't like this guy. It's like you don't feel like, obviously you still kind of feel bad for him because, you know, clearly he is very worn down by everything that's happened to him, but you still don't like him. And then so it becomes a story of not how did he get to the point where he wanted to kill himself? But how did he get to the point where he is this guy? Like, what made him so bad?
Yeah. I thankfully knew that going in. So I didn't have to be like, what is the point, right, of this? Because, like, we don't know about South Korean culture. Like, I don't know a ton of their past. Like, if I didn't know, I would have put it together when they mentioned Gwando. Or the event that happens later in the movie. Because I'd heard about that, about like the student uprising that then became violent and that like really led to the downfall of that Korean regime. And into the current one, which is way more progressive, less military control, let's say.
Yes.
So I would have put it together there. I would have been like, oh, okay. But before that, it's like you don't know. And I do like how it plays it in reverse, because I think if you played it the other way, it wouldn't have worked as well.
No, I like that they kind of unfolded. And that way
you wouldn't have felt the sympathy at the beginning, right?
Yes.
Or at the end of his life. You would have just been like, fuck this guy.
Well, exactly. If it started out with him being a nice kid, like a student, and then, you know, going into the military and having that all happen to him. Yeah, seeing him turn into this guy who is an abusive cop, an abusive husband, you would just hate him. It would get to the point where you're like almost cheering for the ending to come. As opposed to this way, you really want to see what made him this way. And I think it's interesting because, something is as simple as just reversing it made him a much more sympathetic character.
Yeah. And this movie's not an easy watch. Like it is.
It's pretty brutal. Like,
yeah, it's obviously made by like a person who takes like 8 years between movies to make movies because it is demanding and it like trusts its audience. And it's like, if you don't know, we're just going to keep going and we're not going to explain things to you. We'll show them like all the hallmarks of like really a tour cinema and stuff. But I do think it at some point, like it is, and obviously like South Korea has a bunch of incredible directors, but it's very much like, I don't know if Lee Chang Dong's not the best, then he's probably like one of the two best from there, in my opinion.
I gotta say though, for a movie with candy as the title,
oh boy,
there's a lot of torture.
Yeah, and it's a lot of like emotional torture.
Oh man, but like this poor guy throughout the whole movie, he just gets beat down. Like first scene, many spoilers coming ahead, but first scene he's suicidal. Second scene, he's still suicidal. Third scene, he's torturing some people. all of a sudden you see like there's a light. Oh, his like young childhood sweetheart, we come to learn that's who it is, wants to see him. Yay, maybe he won't be so sad. Oh, wait, she's in a coma. Like, this poor guy.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's about people suffering from like mental illness like the mm-hmm. entire time. Like, he's obviously like depressed and a shitty human. Mm-hmm. But the movie never like it explains like how his life became this and like the systemic problems in Korea that causes young men to become like this. Mm-hmm. But it never lets him off the hook, right? Like,
no.
It is still very much about, like, he's making these decisions as well. Mm-hmm. Like, he is capable of not making the decision. They show that when he's, like, when he becomes a cop, but he's mm-hmm. not a bad cop.
Yep.
Yet. They're like, he makes the decision to do that. Like, he succumbs to the pressure. Mm-hmm. And then he makes the decision to marry someone that he doesn't like.
Yep. Yeah. It's just interesting because once they hit the whole military thing, I mean, military service is mandatory in South Korea.
2 year mandatory now.
Yeah. Since I think 57, it's been mandatory. So he's just a kid. And then they go further back in time and you see that he's like, I assume he's a student. He's with his friends. They're singing on the beach, that sort of thing. And you're like, this kid has no business being there. Like, not necessarily people in general of that age, maybe, but this guy in particular, like, he's clearly a really introspective guy. He clearly has a lot going on already. And then he gets put into a wartime situation and he can't even comprehend the gravity of it. And then, of course, because of that, the situation just spirals. He gets shot. He accidentally kills someone. Like, it all becomes so much worse because he shouldn't have even been in there in the first place.
Yeah. And it shows how, like, one moment of violence in like the military, like how it affects somebody for the rest of their life, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he's obviously suffering from PTSD mm-hmm. And like incredibly traumatic experience that he had while serving in the army. But mm-hmm. then it like directly, it changes who he is. And like, there is no help for him mm-hmm. when he's out of there. Like, he was, I'm assuming, but he doesn't seek it out either. And he kind of just like holds it all in. And it like really like, at that point, like, he was forced to do something he didn't want to be a part of, mm-hmm. and then it affects the rest of his life, and all of the decisions he makes since then are affected by this previous thing, so he's not the only one to blame here. Like, you can only blame the individual so much when things like this are so common occurrence, and the fact that, like, the people who are older than him have either gone through the same thing or don't care and are be mm-hmm. like, this is the way it is, so you have to be like this. So then he becomes like this and then it goes on, right?
Yeah.
And he is a bad dad. He's a bad husband. He's,
yep.
Yeah.
It's interesting because it all starts with him trying to make a good choice in a bad situation, and the good choice goes badly. And then throughout the rest of the movie, we see him making bad choices because I think he's like, well, why bother? Why try?
Well, he's like full of self-loathing too.
Yeah. Yeah. I did notice like I said, for a movie about torture, it's there was also kind of this running thread of music and dance and kind of community surrounding those things. How did you feel about that in the film?
I really liked that, right? Cuz like I think it's it is really hard to watch a movie when it is all bad and depressing the whole time, mm-hmm. Especially with an unlikable protagonist.
Yes.
If you have a likable one, it's easier because you're like wanting the person to get through this, but with an unlikable one. So there needs to be these moments of
levity.
Yeah. And also it like makes the world feel more real. And it's like, you get more of understanding about the culture mm-hmm. surrounding this movie and like the Korean culture from those moments. And like, they don't need, it's like the same thing Parasite does, right? Mm-hmm. Where it is like so specific about this one thing that it kind of becomes about more mm-hmm. and they don't really explain the surrounding culture stuff, right? They're just like, you'll learn through the movie.
And you right? do. Like, they force you to figure it out. So suddenly you're not a passive audience. You're really engaged in it. And it feels like you can learn a lot about the society and the culture, the climate at the time in his five various stages of life.
Yeah. Yeah, like when they go to the karaoke scene mm-hmm. And they're singing, you're like, oh, okay. Like, you're like, even though there's only like really three named characters in this movie that are important. Mm-hmm. But like through that, like, you get such an understanding of like his coworkers and the place and like the people they want to interact with mm-hmm. and all that stuff. And then, like, since it's moving backwards, you like can kind of build from where he ended up being like, okay, so we know he gets there. So it's mm-hmm. easy to understand. Then when it jumps you to the previous one, you're like already like have the understanding of like what this guy decides to be
mm-hmm.
and like who he decides to hang out with. So like you start asking those questions less and less, right? And you more just be like, understand the world.
Which
and
is
like, I really enjoyed it.
Because it means that like at the beginning, it's like he's yelling, there's loud music, like it's very loud. And then as we start, and also your brain is loud trying to figure out what's going on. But as we start answering all those questions for ourselves is when the movie gets quieter. And then it ends with this nice, it really is like just a nice scene of him and his friends kind of like singing together. Well, and he kind of right, goes off on his own.
Innocent, right? And he's like untarnished of shit.
Yeah, that's why I loved the musical parts, because I think there was one in each of the chapters of his life, and it shows that like he has changed so much over these 20 years, but there are some things that never change. Like that's a big element of the culture, a big element of who he is, the karaoke, the singing with the buds, that sort of thing. And that never goes away, which I like, because it made him feel grounded in still being that same character, and that it's like the world's not necessarily changing, he's changing. It was interesting too, because in each one of those scenes, he either wanders off on his own for a nice quiet moment, or he kind of has a big freak out, a bit of both. So it's interesting to see how his reactions change in those scenes of life that happened to him in each of these phases.
Yeah, no, yeah, I do think, and it ultimately, like, the choice resides with him, right? Like, mm-hmm. he makes the choice to never go home when he's a cop to see his wife, and mm-hmm. she's pregnant, and he tells her not to call me, don't call me.
But he also hates her, so.
Yeah, and then, but when he's, you know, I think it's the first flashback, he, like, blames his ex-wife, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he's, like, incapable of accepting his part in everything that's happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
Right, he's just suffering, and like it's not like people do try to help him, and he decides not to.
He kind of, and I hate to say this, but he kind of decides to be the victim at a point in his life. Like, yes, something mm-hmm. terrible did happen to him. He has PTSD, but after that, all the decisions, all the people, he acts like people are forcing him into things. But like you said earlier, it is always a choice. But he chooses to let other people make the decisions for him. Chooses to kind of victimize himself in those situations.
Yeah, and this is not like exclusive to this time frame at all, right? Like mm-hmm. it is still very much like a thing where of like men don't open up your emotions, right? Like you're told to hold it all in, and it's you're supposed to be tough mm-hmm. and strong, and you can't like open up or like be vulnerable, and you know, you got to hang out with the boys, and what happens what if you do stuff with other people, then that's just fine, but if your wife cheats on you, then she's the villain.
Of course. Not like you might have influenced her into doing that.
No, and like she's unhappy and, you know, has met somebody nice who's actually maybe treats her better, hopefully, than you
mm-hmm.
do. Mm-hmm. But it is also like it critiques that because it is the individual's decision to be like that. But it's also like people are like that for a reason. Like people just don't, because as it shows in the early movie, he's like more open and he's like comfortable being like, I want to do this, and like being nice and just being a person who hasn't experienced that in their life, right? Like I want to say her name properly. Sun Im like walks up to him, and then he's just like, yeah, I want to be a photographer, and like I like flowers and I like landscapes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you see through life, he like loses that and he becomes way more closed off, and then he's like, I'm a man.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kills himself in front of a train.
Yeah, and in front of all the trains.
And like this movie like obviously does like very like there's trains in every flashback,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and they usually appear at like big moments of the scenes, right? Yeah. Of the flashbacks, they're around important moments where a change happens for his character.
Yeah, have you seen any of the other director's movies other than Burning? Because I'm wondering, like. This was 20 years ago, and Burning was, I think, 2018. I'm just curious to know what I can see that he made a lot of movies in between there, but I'm curious to see what those kind of things look like how his style has changed.
I've only other seen Burning, and he is very interested in young male like impotence and rage.
Yeah,
he's like Burning is also a takedown of like a similar thing.
Mm-hmm.
than Peppermint Candy. It's less so about like the service aspect. It's more of about like the greater culture, like more, it's more online because it kind of has to be, mm-hmm. right? And it's more about Burning is different because it is also like about three people, but it's about two men and one woman and like the relationship between them. And like, it, I don't want to spoil it because it's an incredible, it was my favorite movie of that year and it's an incredible movie. And it's different. It's so different because 20 years have passed. Like the filmmaking styles are different. Mm-hmm. He's obviously gotten a bigger budget. So it's kind of like, it's a little different, but Peppermint Candy is really good as well.
Yeah, I enjoyed it remarkably so for a movie where I did not like the main character.
Yeah, and it's not, like, it's also slow and it takes its time, but mm-hmm. I also think the acting's really good.
Yes.
Like, I think the lead performance is really great, and the his wife and then his son Im and Hong, what's her name, it starts with an H,
his wife
Hongja.
Yeah,
Hongja. They aren't given a lot of scenes, but they are very good in them, and those characters are fleshed out for like the limited amount of time you spend with them,
which is nice because in a story that's all about one person, it's not really, it's like there are people who come in and out of his life, and like you said, there are people who care about him. And it's just a matter of if he can see that or can let himself have them care about him.
Yeah, I think I'm really glad I saw Peppermint Candy. It's not like it's like, oh, great, Peppermint Candy. Let's sit down and, you know, be happy. But
I mean, yeah, I don't know that I would want to watch it again anytime soon. But
no. But it is like, this is not to get like hyperbolic about anything, but it is like, this story is best told as a movie.
Yes.
And I cannot say that about Sleepy Hollow. Is not best told as a movie.
Sleepy Hollow maybe is best told as like a bedtime story.
Yeah. And, you know, maybe there is a movie version of Sleepy Hollow that's really good, or it could be really good,
mm-hmm.
but it's not that one. Whereas I don't know if Peppermint Candy was made into something else, it would be as good.
No, I agree.
And like, yeah, that's kind of where I don't have much else to say. I think we don't need to vote on this one. I think we know what's going through.
Obviously Sleepy Hollow.
Oh, wow. More Johnny Depp. It's obviously Peppermint Candy. And I do think we'll have an interesting conversation with it against SLC Punk, because they're mm-hmm. kind of doing the same thing.
Yes, very much so.
So where can people find you on the internet?
Ooh, that's Carolyn, great...
or in real life, if you want to be a psychopath and let that be known.
In real life, no. So you can find me on Instagram at CarolynDunk93 and on Twitter there as well. And
it's a travesty.
Yeah, I pretty much exclusively tweet the podcast episodes. So maybe you'll see the graphic or the little doodle, as James calls it, up there soon as well.
She doesn't even reply to me on Twitter. So good luck, people.
You know, I'm looking at my recent tweets. There's one from February 9th of this year. And then the one before that is from 2015. So, oops.
You know, you're consistent, at least. You can find me at James_Willicks on Twitter, and then James Willicks on Instagram. And you can find this podcast on SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify.
And we have Apple, an email, right?
And Apple. And we do have an email. It's mm-hmm. letswatchpod@gmail.com. If you want to send anything in there, go ahead. Mm-hmm. You also, the graphic of the bracket is in the description below, which you can find. It is the blank one. They'll as stuff. Once we finish one complete round, then I'll update it.
Mm-hmm.
But until then, it will just be the entire empty bracket that we'll fill out as we go along. And you can find
I think I did
everything else.
What you're trying to say is
the person who made it. That's who it, the person who made it is Emma.
Yep, Emma. You can find her on Twitter at I don't know, Carolyn's roommate.
Yeah. My life is about Carolyn.
It's actually emma.fuller93. So I think she copied me on that one. You can find her there on Instagram.
Definitely. You were the first person to use your birth year in your name.
I was. That's why I have no dot in there. But you can join us next time. We're going to be chatting about Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. And that'll be up against Jinro the Wolf Brigade. And we'll also be discussing American Movie versus Cruel Intentions. So quite the variety next week, it looks like.
Yeah, I am excited about the next rounds of this more than maybe the first rounds.
We're trying to weed through all the bad stuff so that we can have good movies.
Yeah, because we made mistakes. I didn't make any mistakes when I picked movies. All of my movies are perfect. All 32 I picked are good. All 32 Carolyn picked are bad.
I mean, I did pick Sleepy Hollow. I do regret it.
Yeah, you should. I'm pretty sure I picked Peppermint Candy and SLC Punk. So,
no, I think I picked SLC Punk, man. Give me credit for something good.
As we've seen in all of the ones that have advanced, I picked all of them. I picked Fight Club. I picked Virgin Suicide. Fight Club. No, you did it.
I did. It was my first
seed. I am gaslighting everyone. Let me do it.
James likes to take all the credit for all the fun things we do.
I've seen Peppermint Candy, and I was like, that's what a man's supposed to be. and broken.
Oh, God.
Carolyn, end with a pun.
Oh.
And don't you use SLC Punk, goddammit.
I'm stressed out. I can't pun.
Do it. You can't pun on command?
I can't pun on command.
All right. So, well, that's disappointing. Oh, no. Well, I know what we're going to end with.
What?
Give me your 1 minute Bachelor Victoria update.
Oh, you don't want to get me started. That's a 20 minute update.
No, it's one.
All we'll say about this girl is she's the biggest gaslighter in the world. And on her hometown visit, she got into a fight because she was asked a simple question. She never introduced the Bachelor to her parents. And then in the next episode, when people said, "How are your hometown?" she was like, "Oh, it's great." So that's pretty much her in a nutshell.
Are you excited for her on Bachelor in Paradise?
I really am, because she's a lot, and she looks like a Disney princess, but does not act like one. I'll put it that way.
And if you want this content, Carolyn will tweet at you about The Bachelor.
I mean, yeah, right now I'm in a Love is Blind, craze, but
if you want, I should just say, if you want trash reality TV,
then I'm your girl.
It's the life you chose.